Accession number 18579, Reel 2.
They'll fry Reel 2.
I'll say they hadn't thought of this before, so they tried it by sending in a pair of points, you know, arrow points, of three LSTs made up the 409 and two others. And they went in as a trio sort of thing. And there's the SBA on the 409, who incidentally got a Reading recommend on his records because of this. I think an award for it. I'm not quite sure about that. I don't know his name. But they tried it and it was successful. So they tried it again with the next batch. And that's the first time they thought about this idea of bringing the wounded back. And because when it normally came off, because of this idea that they, you know, learn by your mistakes type of thing, they detail, like, detail so many LSTs off to bring off the wounded. And that's why they made them into hospital ships, to use the word hospital ship, because they weren't really hospital ships. And they, so Churchill, in a roundabout way, warned the Americans about what was going to happen, or what would happen, because of his experience there. But the Americans took no notice. They just, you know, right, we'll go in and we'll do this and we'll do that sort of thing. They did it and they came off worse. But when they organised their medical thing, they had done a couple of landings and then they started bringing all the medical people and things like that and putting clearing stations on the beaches, things like that. It was a bit late then, something had happened, sort of thing, you know. But, anyhow, as I say, going back to when we discharged a ship, it was so funny, really. We had bottles of medical brandy to give to the wounded. Now, a lot of people didn't want it, and we couldn't take it, and that sort of thing. We had a lot of things over, cigarettes, sweets, and all that sort of thing. So, we had 3/4 of a carton of medical brandy, which is 9 bottles, 12 in a crate. And so the officers took 2, gave 3 to the lads in the thing, and the rest of it they put into the stores. So we all had half a cup or a quarter of a cup of this medical brandy, which you can't taste at first, you know, but afterwards you feel it. When I woke up in the morning, I was lying in a Carly float, which is, you know what a Carly float is? It's like a lifeboat. And the ship alongside, the LST alongside, was an American ship. And all the Yanks were over the rail all laughing at me. And I was fast asleep in this Carly float. That's about the only joyful thing come out of it, you know. But
do you remember any of the particular cases that you dealt with in the way of wounded from Normandy?
Oh, God. Yeah. The pitiful to think about them, really. Some who were coming in, you know, you wouldn't think anything was wrong with them until you released their clothing, and, you know, you might find them, some of the, you know, God, we just ripped their sleeves like that, and you find them blinking, I'll be just hanging off inside the sleeve. You wouldn't think it, the sleeve was down, sort of thing, you know, and that type of thing, and of course, you had to give everybody a shot of morphine. And you put there's a tag around there, pins of their uniform, put into the clothing, and you have to put the date and time when you give them, how much morphine you gave them. We had morphine in small capsules, just like small tubes of paint of you buy. And just like that, with a small needle on the end. And you just took the top off, and you just squeeze it like a tube of paint. And that's the sort of thing you have to keep replenishing in your name. And when you got all the wounded sorted out and they were going into amputations and all that sort of thing, I didn't actually do any amputations, of course, but I had to dress them, and if they were very excessive bleeding, I had to put tourniquets on, because some of them come straight off the beaches and things like that, you see, and they couldn't all be treated on the beach, you know, they had to get them away as quick as possible. Things like that would come up case, and some very bad things, you know, and everybody was very, you know, sort of very grateful to what we were doing. The only ones who weren't grateful was the officers, and the officers are wounded, they want to be treated first and all sort of thing, you know, I got an instance of one officer, I was given morphine out, and this officer called me over and he said, I haven't I had morphine? And I looked at his tag and he'd had a dose of morphine. So he'd given him a dose before he came aboard, you see. So I said, sorry, sir, can't give you a dose, you're not due for it yet. I can't give you any more. You know, you can only split them up into so many hours, certainly. Well, he kicked up a foot. So I went and told my MO, my boss, sort of thing, you know. And I told him, so he said, okay. He went over to him and he said, what's the matter? So he said, racing, he said, won't give you a shot of morphine. He said, well, you're not due for one. I want, he's getting in, all sort of thing. That's attitude, sort of thing. You know. He said, okay. So he said to me, my boss said to me, we got a 10cc syringe. The 10cc syringe is about five inches long and about an inch thick. So I said, yes, sir. But you had one of these in case you had to give big drips, things like that, you see. So I brought one of my bag and gave it to him, and he put a bloody big needle about that big on the end of it. He said, roll up your sleeve. And he went, and the officer just looked at him, his mouth gaping open, his eyes popping. He said, I can't feel any pain now. I think I'm all right now. He said, I'll hang on to the next dose. He said, I thought you might somehow. He said, he walked away, and he gave me, my boss gave me a wink as he walked away, you know. And later on, he said to me, don't mess with people like that, he said, when they're on the stretchers, he said, they're no different to anybody else. He said, they're a wounded person. He said, if they warrant it, give it to them. He said, he said, some can be more wounded than others, yeah, but as far as you're concerned, he said, they are a patient. He said, they're no different. If it was the general came aboard, he said, you would get no different treatment than anybody else. He said, everybody's equal on this tank space, he said. To me later on.
Did you have enemy wounded?
Sorry?
Did you have enemy wounded?
Yes, we had some. We had some Air Force, Luftwaffe. When we went into Carrington, off the Carrington beach, I was around by the Utah beach. So we brought some down there. They brought some down. I think we had about 18 of them come aboard ours. There's a photograph in that album actually shows some of the prisoners brought back. And we found out that out of these wounded, three of them were medical, Luftwaffe medical men. So we brought them in to our dining cabin, and to help out with help treating their own people, you see. And we would give them the medicines, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the treatments, and they could treat their own because they could speak their own language. And we got on very well with them, actually. We got on very well with them. And they couldn't understand why we had butter and jam with our bread. They couldn't understand that. All I could understand was you either had butter or jam, not and, sort of thing, you know. And they couldn't understand this. And if they had milk in their tea, they couldn't understand we could have sugar as well, besides milk, sugar, because they were limited. It was we were all quite surprised at what the things they were telling us, you know, and when they were seeing things on the table, and we were having everything was put on the table at once, and the kind of meals we were having, they couldn't understand that. You could have a slice of bread, a plate full of bread, sort of thing, to help yourself type of thing for the meals. They could understand why they had a full plate full of bread. You know, they'd be allowed, say, two or three slices at the very most for a whole meal. You know, and they could understand why we could have two cups of tea or coffee where they could only have one. And things like that. It was we were amazed that, you know, we thought that, you know, they were well established over there, and they weren't, you know. We had a lot of trouble. I'm talking about the invasion forces now. We had a lot of trouble with the French people, the people in Normandy itself, because not the Norman people, and not French really. We had a lot of trouble with them in the sense that during the period that the Germans were in occupied their country, they were living the life of luxury. All their cattle was looked after. Some of them married their French girls. They're bringing up families in the years that we were there, And that. And we just went in there, right across their farms and everything, and wrecked everything, which things happen, that happens in war anyway. When our troops were going in, they come across a lot of aggravation from the locals. There was one instance where the French Canadians were going through, and as you hasten into a town or a village, when you capture this, they don't kind of, you walk through like a kind of a victory march type of thing. And there was one instance, I can tell lots of tales like this that we heard of, and these French Canadians were walking through, and all the women with roundabouts sort of thing, and they had baskets over their arm, and just they'd been shopping. And as they walked through, as the women suddenly put their hands in their baskets and pulled out guns and bombs and threw them at the troops. And this troop of French Canadians did nothing more but turn round and went back through the village again and killed every man, woman and child in the village. Said, we're not having that. And they just killed everybody in the village and just flattened it stone by stone. I mean, that's just one instance that we heard.
Did you have psychological casualties in the LS2?
Well, I suppose they did, yeah. I think we had an officer, not when I was aboard, but we had an officer, I believe, I heard about this, when, after I went aboard, there was an officer in the Middle East, one of the Middle East campaigns that went mad. You know, he went off his rocker, because he couldn't stand what was happening, you know. And he was replaced by a man who, incidentally, I met him a couple of times, you know, to be honest, Skipper. And he died last year, the same man. And he belonged to our association. And he was the only man that served aboard the LST, a landing craft, put it that way. And he only had one arm. An officer. He had one arm.
Would the wounded who came in the LST be noisy or silent?
Oh, no, they were, some of them were moaning with pain and things like that, you know, and then they'd quiet. And by the time we got back over here, they'd be pretty well quiet and sort of thing. They'd quiet down, they were talking a bit more rationally, because by that time they'd had the treatments. By the time they got back over here, they'd had the treatments, they'd had the morphine and that sort of thing, because we were given morphine every hour or hour and a half or 2 hours, whatever was prescribed by the doctor, you know. And because they were calmed down, just like being in a hospital here, you know, you can be in violent pain after you've had a dose of sort of painkiller, you quiet down, you know, yourself, if anything happens that way. It's the same sort of thing really. But some are coming in, just some are screaming with pain, and so they brought straight off the battlefield, don't forget, you know, they brought straight in. And but surprisingly enough, you were so sort of busy and wrapped up in what you were doing, you didn't have time to take a lot of notice of how they were shouting or whatever. You know what I mean? There was a lot of shouting going on, orders being directed, things like that. You know, put them over there and things like that. And you know, because you couldn't just bring them straight onto the ship and just put them anywhere. You had to put them in an orderly fashion, sort of thing. You know, and when all racks were filled up, they were laid down on the deck in an orderly fashion so you could walk between them, as you can see in one of the photographs there. So a lot of things there, because a lot of the shouting was done by the people that was bringing them aboard, you know, the stretcher bearers and one thing another, and some of the ambulances were backing up the ramps onto the mouth of the tank space, and they unloaded them straight off the ambulances. Some of them were being brought out in amphibious ducks and things like that, you know. But by the time they got back home, they were sort of quite subdued by that time. And, you know, good job too. I think it affected us as well, really.
What state were you in by the time you'd finished with Normandy?
Well, I was sent home when it's paid off. I came home on leave, and I arrived home about 2:30 in the morning. My dad came down the stairs to go to work, and I was lying on the couch, and I had scratched my arm on a jetty through an accident, and I was lying there, and I had my arm bandaged up, and for the first, I was just lying there, wasn't sleeping. But by that time, when we came off the ship, they stopped giving us Benzedrine tablets. Benzedrine tablets keeps you awake, Sometimes doctors used to take those when they're going for their exams to keep them awake. And for weeks, well, I'm saying for weeks, I was on for a fortnight, sort of thing. You know. For the first, say, 10 days anyway, I'd wake up in the middle of the night screaming sometimes, going through my mind, and my father would be sitting on the, across me, holding me down like this, you know, stop me struggling. Oh, it was terrible, terrible thoughts. But I found out later that a couple of our blokes actually had landed up in hospital. But what I'm going to tell you, going back, when we first went on the LSC, there was 206 of us went from Stonehouse Hospital, and only 8 of us came back from Stonehouse. That's only Stonehouse, because all the SBAs that was on the 409 went all from Stonehouse. Some were from Portsmouth and some were from Dartmouth and different hospitals, you know. We weren't all put together, you know. But I remember when we came back to Stonehouse Hospital, I can't remember to this day, I remember exactly how I got over to Normandy. And I remember leaving the ship and taking aboard, putting aboard a truck in the docks. In Southampton Docks, this was. And then taken to the station. And from then onwards, I don't remember how I got back to Stonehouse Hospital. The next thing I recall, as I don't know whether we were brought back from the station, whether we were brought from the station there, or whether we went into Devonport, but I can't remember now. And I've tried to think, and my mind just goes a blank that period of time. But I remember walking down the colonnade in Stonehouse Hospital with, I think it was three or four of us, walked down the colonnade in Stonehouse Hospital, walking towards the main office. There was a colonnade that side, hospital, colonnade that side. You've been in Stonehouse Hospital, have you, inside? I remember walking up the colonnade, and I remember three or four nurses walking down, VADs they were, volunteer detachments, walking down, and they just stood still and they looked at us, and next thing, they just flew down the corridor and they threw their arms around us, and they were saying, one said, "Thank God somebody's come back." Anyway, we were just so stunned, you know. And that's when we found out then that only there was us three, and another two had arrived the day before or that morning, something like that. And about, I think it was 2 days after, there was, three more. Anyhow, there was 8 of us all together, right back at Stonehouse. You know what I mean? And one of the first things, we sent a woman leave right away. When we got back off leave, 2 out of the 8 went straight into sick bay, nervous tension. The rest of us were okay. And the first job we got, I don't know whether you know this, but penicillin was at its infancy then. And the first time it was ever tried, they didn't know very much about it, the first time it was ever tried in a big way, I'm talking about injection-wise, was in Normandy. It was never tried on a massive scale before. And all penicillin had to be made up as you used it. It was powder and sterile water. Now, it's generally, you know, it's ready made up for months now, put into a fridge. And when you made up penicillin ointments, you had to make it up into an ointment, and you had to put it into a fridge for half an hour to cool it down before you gave it. And once you started using it, you had to throw the rest away. You couldn't keep it any more than an hour, penicillin ointment. Now you can buy a tube of it now and keep it in the cupboard for months. You know what I mean? But this thing, now we knew all about this, but they didn't know in Stonehouse Hospital enough about us. So the jobs we got, we were put onto the wards that used the penicillin, and we had to show the staff on the ward, because they were only new staff, newly trained since we passed out, and we had to train them and show them how to use the penicillin and what to do with it.
Did you have nightmares gone for long?
No, I didn't, actually. Luckily enough, I didn't.
Were you having nightmares about the wounded?
Well, yeah, it was what I was doing. I was seeing my mind, or seeing visions of my mind of what I'd been looking at. And while I was looking at it, doing the job, it didn't worry me. And all the rest of, I found out later, the rest of the lads had the same sort of things. When we came off the penis, Benzedrine tablets. When you came off the Benzedrine tablets, your mind went back to normal again. See what I mean? And you became tired. When you became tired, you started thinking. But while you're on the LSD, while you're doing your job, you didn't think. You did think, of course, but you didn't think of what you were doing. You were just doing it. You know what I mean? You were doing it automatically. Even when you came off duty for a couple of hours, you were allowed to come off duty a couple of hours. You couldn't sleep. You couldn't close your eyes because you didn't even feel like closing your eyes. You know, you were sort of like, you became like sort of automatic zombies, really. And but no, they didn't say it didn't last, really. Naturally, you got thought. You can't get rid of those thoughts. But those particular nightmares and that sort of thing. They weren't nightmares, really. It was just sort of thoughts. You suddenly woke up and I woke up suddenly without knowing it. My father was holding me down, sort of thing. And I was screaming. At one period, I always remember, I felt somebody slap me across the face. And it was him. He said, "Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up." You know what I mean? Because he'd been in the First World War.
Was there any damage done to your LST through enemy action?
No. There was only one damage while I was on it anyway. When we were coming off one of the landings, you came off backwards, staying first, and you always turned to starboard. But American LST, which was next to us, this is when we were on the Homer Beach, he turned to port. And his bows ran right into the other side of us, and ripped the panel off the sick bay, the ship sick bay. This is, you know what I mean. So we had to go and get a new panel put on there. And then we broke one of the blades off one of the screws, one of the propellers, and then we had to have that replaced. So it was only a matter of a few hours in dock. Went to Chilby Docks to have that done. Entered Tilby Docks, had a new screw put on straight out. We were only about an hour and a half, you know. Because people were waiting in the dock for these sort of things to happen, you know. But so it's got sort of that sort of thing, you know. We didn't have any damage otherwise. We had a few blokes wounded on the deck, their gunners, things like that, you know. Because when we first went over there, for the first three days, it took 3 days to clear the skies of the Luftwaffe. And we were on the beach the first time we went in, and we waited. The others had gone off for the next batch to come in, and we were still dried out there waiting for the wounded, loaded up with the wounded, and they come and strap the beach. And right across the wounded one of our gunners, but he wasn't badly wounded. He got a bullet in his arm or his leg or something like that it was, but he got treated on board. And then he was discharged. When we came back, he was discharged back into back, and he was replaced by somebody else, you know. But that sort of thing, I suppose, happened many times. But I often wonder what happened to the rest of the lads, you know. I said it was 206 of us went, and only 8 of us came back, so it was a bad show, like, you know what I mean.
I think you were in the reoccupation of Singapore at the end of the war.
Yes, we were shipped out towards the Far East, to the Far East. We didn't know exactly where we were going. We were shipped out to the Far East, and by this time, lots of the SBAs that were in training when we left for Normandy were now passed out. So they were in a joint up. And then we were shipped out, and we landed in India, and Cochin in India. It was turned out to be a landing craft base for the Far East, and I was there for about five, say 7 weeks, something like that, yeah, enough, maybe 8 weeks. And while we were there, we'd done some jungle training, a bit of jungle training. Which we didn't require actually, but we had to learn anyway. And then we were shipped out, and I was shipped out across India to Ceylon. It was Ceylon then. It's Sri Lanka now, of course. Ceylon. And I was put aboard a hospital ship, the Arangi, MV Arangi, a Dutch hospital ship. And we set out across to the Far East. And we thought, to be honest with you, we thought we were going to the Philippines. But it turned out we went to Malaya. And as we got into the Malaccan Straits towards Singapore, we heard that the actual invasion of Singapore and Malaya had taken place. So we said, uh-oh. Everyone said, uh-oh, that's where we're going. So, you know. So, sure enough, we went in, and we went in with the occupying troops then. The invasion wasn't a big thing, really, in Singapore. Not like Normandy was, so that, you know, because it was Singapore was sort of invaded from all sides, so that, you know, it's like going around like a roundabout island in the roadway, so that it was all suddenly occupied. And by that time, the Hiroshima bomber dropped, and then, you know, all that sort of thing had happened. We just heard about it. We didn't know very much about it. And then we went to Singapore, and we went to this barracks. It was called Landlock. They called it Landlock, HMS Landlock, which turned into HMS Sultan eventually. That's where that plaque is on the wall there. And then next thing we heard that the prisoners from the Japanese jails, Japanese camps, are being released. So they rounded us up, and they shipped us out from there. And it's while we're in Singapore then. Excuse me. And then we joined up with a few Air Force and some Army medical, all medical men. And they sent us to Changi jail, Changi camp. And the first thing that greets us was the Japanese prisoners, our fellows, I mean, the Allied. We had to treat them. They were coming out, just imagine the state they were in. You've seen documentaries about it anyway. And that was our job. We had to treat them, because most of them were dehydrated and things like that. Make sure they didn't drink too much or eat too much at once, and also treat them generally. And then put them into a clearance camp where they were sorted out and sent back to their own countries. You know, collectively, there wasn't as many British as we thought there were there. They're mostly people like Australians, some Canadians, a lot of Gurkhas, and other nationalities, sort of thing. But there wasn't as many British as we thought. So then, because that was our job then, and then we were handed them back to the medical, and we went back to our own bases, and we had a bit of a bad do in Singapore, in the sense that when the Japanese fled Singapore, they poisoned beer vats. Now this is something that the civilians back home here, a lot of people don't know about, but they poisoned the beer vats with diesel oil. It'll be in the medical records just anyway, in the news records. And of course, when our lads went ashore, they went into all the bars and all sort of thing, with drinking bottles of this and bottles of that. And then we got an influx. We got called up middle of the night. I was actually on duty that particular time. We got a call middle of the night. And called the SBAs. I was told to call a couple of the day staff out, because it would be required. And say, I don't want to know what happened. I said, there's some ill people coming in. They've been poisoned. And we said, poisoned? We were just lucky to have poisoned. It turned out they were poisoned with this diesel oil. You know what I mean? Now, on that first night, we lost 22 men. In our sick bay, we're pumping the stomach out, but didn't survive. And we actually used the barracks jail